Hello to our listeners. Welcome to the Women Governance Trailblazers podcast, where we listen to the journeys of trailblazing women in the corporate governance field, their passions, struggles, and commitment to improving how companies and boards function. My name is Courtney Hamlet, and my co-host is Liz Dungey.
Hi, everyone.
Liz and I are both super passionate about governance, and we want to spotlight some of the trailblazing women who share that passion. We love connecting with guests from different paths and industries to hear their perspectives on what surprised them in their career and where they think the field of corporate governance is going. For this episode, we are delighted to be talking with Lilian Hughes, Chair of Direct Women, which is an organization dedicated to increasing the representation of women lawyers on corporate boards. And she has served on the board of that organization since 2021. Lily is currently Assistant Dean at Syracuse University College of Law. Lily is also a leader with NAPABA, NAPABA, a national organization with over 80,000 members representing the interests of Asian Pacific American lawyers, judges, law students, and law professors. She chairs the Best Under 40 Award Selection Committee and also chairs the NAPABA In-House Counsel Summit with programming for their highly selected pipeliners program, targeting those AAPHI in-house counsels qualified to be the next Fortune 1000 general counsel. Over the course of her career, she has led complex international legal functions at Arrow Electronics and Public Storage and held a number of leadership roles at Ingram Micro, where she worked in-house for almost 18 years. Lily has also spent time in private practice, and she served on the global board of the Association of Corporate Counsel for 3 years and served on the executive committee for 2 years. Lily previously served as an independent director, chair of the nominating committee, and a member of the compensation and audit committees at Nibiru, which is a New York Stock Exchange American-listed company pioneering a new type of laser for metal processing, 3D printing, and more. Lily, we are very excited to speak with you. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm super honored to be speaking with rock star women in governance, like you, Liz, and Courtney.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lily. So we shared an overview of all of the many things that you are doing and have done throughout the course of your career, but we'd love to hear just a little more color from your perspective about all you've done through the years and what you're doing now, if you don't mind sharing.
Oh, absolutely. I'm delighted to. I think for folks who might just meet me now, they look at my, very long career and think, everything is really super easy and think that, but they're just seeing that, which is really a movie that's been completed, but it is still not. The journey really started for me when I was 11 and my family moved to the US. So I had to learn English and translate everything from Chinese to English. For the first 11 years of my life, I actually lived with my family of five in a 100 square foot room behind half a tailor shop and half a shoe shop in Kowloon City. And we did not even have hot water coming from the tap. So it was really, I think, the biggest revelation going to Los Angeles with my family is to be able to get hot water out of the tap. And frankly, I remember my sister and I would, on the weekends, we would take the bus with my mother and we would go to downtown Los Angeles and get packets of clothing, pieces of clothing, so that my mother could sew and we would help her iron during the weekdays to help really supplement income while my father repaired shoes during the day and he was a busboy at night. So that upbringing, and really being somebody who's the first in my family to graduate from high school, college, law school, and translating for my parents and my mother, who is also illiterate in Chinese, really, I think I would say put me in a space where I developed agility, persistence, ability to be resilient, and frankly, have a lot of grit to be successful through the, many different hats that I've been able to wear over the course of my career. And so I'm delighted to be able to share.
That's incredible.
An amazing amount of work ethic you have from a young age as well.
I think it's, I live the American dream and I'm truly, truly blessed to be here. And my whole life actually have been to help others, putting the ladder down to help others, because for me to be where I am today required so many people to really go out of their way to help me, from English teacher who forced me to be a secretary and stand up and actually report to class. And I was so shy to, you know, frankly, many different professional successes as a result of others who give back. So that's really where I am today. I feel so blessed to be able to give back and share.
So following on your helping others theme and wearing many hats, you know, you're chair of Direct Women, which may be relevant to many of our listeners. Could you tell us more about that organization's mission and the criteria and steps for being involved?
Oh, I'm delighted to talk about Direct Women. Let me maybe start with a little bit of history. So where we are today of women on boards, of course, we still are a long ways to parity. But compared to 17 years ago, it was not even really an idea that was much discussed, you know, women on boards. And it was really through the ABA, Commission on Women, through a study and women partners in particular, working in law firms, looking at that, you know, which is the highest place where corporations can actually have a voice and influence on behalf of shareholders, to look around to see actually the representation of women on boards were practically nil. And these brave women and men, including Alan Beller, who was with, you know, for some time a giant in SEC, and when I started out of Corp Fin, I mean, these folks really saw a need. And they started an organization called Direct Women as a nonprofit. And really over time, and you know, Liz, you and I discussed Hillary Sale being part of the Direct Women family, and she was on the board and actually helped to put together the Board Institute. And we've had very, very good success in creating a very personalized, highly selective program targeted at women lawyers who are very senior, you know, general counsels, former general counsels, women partners or managing women partners who have retired or are still active. And we're super selective, but I think the only one that target women lawyers. And because of that niche, we've been able to create a community and a network of support among CEOs, public company directors to help not only these women who have gone through the Board Institute yearly for the last 15 years or so, to get on corporate boards. And in fact, delighted that I was able to celebrate on October 18th at the New York Stock Exchange and ring the closing bell to celebrate the 200th board seat that had been earned and selected, companies selecting our Board Institute alumni and celebrate with nearly, you know, 80 women and plus Alan Beller on the podium as well. And it's an organization where we're not only just helping the women who go through our Board Institute, and it is a select group. We also provide education, free webinars to anybody to talk about the board service journey, in particular, how women lawyers should sell their value.
That's fantastic. And I'll tell you, I go so far back in Corp Fin at the SEC. I worked with Alan Beller when he was there. Fantastic about the 200th board seat.
I know, I was there and I just felt like, oh my gosh, he's one of my heroes. And to be on the podium, they're standing next to him. And he was one of those who really, from what I understand, even wrote personal checks to make sure that, you know, we could continue with our work. And then to where we're today, when I think about many other organizations also have been created to help women get on boards, right? Not just women lawyers. And it's a good thing, right? Our focus and our mission are all aligned. We are trying to increase diversity in the boardroom. And it is something that, you know, is near and dear to my heart, you know, increasing diversity in the legal profession, right? From ACC, you know, under Vita Richardson, and to, you know, to the law school here. I'm very involved in APABA with a diversity and inclusion, and frankly, paying it forward to help more diverse women, as well as folks from different backgrounds, be able to, like myself, know role models to have the belief that they can be successful in the boardroom, as well as in the legal profession, in-house or in law firms.
Absolutely. And building that pipeline is such a huge part of it, because those network connections are so important for people to be able to get the spot in the future. A lot of these searches are informal, and especially at the smaller companies. And so that's great work. if we have sound effects on the podcast, we do a little horn right now to celebrate.
And also when I first started, you know, women in corporate governance was not very, it was also one of those things which really, you know, you might be the first woman or the only woman, and certainly my only person of color in the room, right? To advise clients, also to really be able to have a voice. And so I think it's been really great to see that really has expanded in terms of opportunities for women in corporate governance over time. And what that means in both the law firm and in-house capacity is that you're not only getting a seat at the table, all of us, but we're also advising those who are around the table. And so our voice is getting heard.
Yes. Yeah, that's huge. You also mentioned earlier your upbringing and how that enabled you to have grit and adapt to new situations. And that adaptability is such a key skill for those of us advising boards and those of us who aspire to be on boards. So if you don't mind diving into a bit more detail on what you think has allowed you to be able to adapt to so many different subject areas and demands and types of roles over the years, and also how your corporate governance experience has played into all of that.
Yes, Liz, I think, first of all, coming from a different background and certainly from a different culture means that I have to be more, as part of the adaptability, is to be able to listen and try to read the room to understand not only what has been said, but also what has not been said.
Mm-hmm.
And then having the emotional intelligence, which is frankly a skill set, right? To be able to read the room, to understand what are the drivers and the things that are important to those around the room, and then who are the influencers outside of the room, and being able to read in a nuanced way different relationships and trying to understand the norms of culture within a corporation or even within a law firm. I think those are really important skill sets and foundation. And so I think my background allowed me to be able to really hone in on those skill sets over time, because I really was coming from a different culture, different language. And frankly, being able to sort that cross-cultural perspective allowed me to be able to be agile in different settings. And I think having a corporate governance, which gives you a structure and also the ability to think and advise based on certain rules and regulations, but adapt to different cultures of companies and boardrooms, and even within law firm, I think is really helpful to bridge differences. Because at the end of the day, I really believe regardless of cultural differences or economic or socioeconomic backgrounds, there are some commonalities that we can build the bridge, and having the ability to establish the commonalities and build trust, which ultimately allows people to work together in a corporate governance setting, I think is super important. So regardless of industry, regardless of setting, I think having those basic foundational, I would say challenging times in my background has been super helpful.
Became your superpower.
It became my superpower. Yes.
Well, another superpower you seem to have is your ability to guide companies through discussions with regulators and business partners worldwide and transforming your own international legal departments into cohesive teams. As you know, boards and advisors are facing a very turbulent geopolitical environment right now, especially right now. What are one to two significant geopolitical issues that you think most companies need to be monitoring right now? And what should those of us who are lawyers who have a legal background be doing to support the board and the business on these topics?
I think that regardless whether companies actually are just operating in the US, every single company and client that you also, you know, may represent should really be focused on, I think, at least two different ones. The first one is the U.S.-China relationship. I mean, today's Wall Street Journal, there's an article about, you know, regardless of which U.S. presidential candidate wins, Washington's going to be stricter on Chinese imports. And really, you know, when I was in, certainly Ingram Micro and in Arrow Electronics, you know, really saw firsthand how China is already many, many years in advance trying to essentially cut out U.S. Supply chain, right? So they do not rely on U.S. And right now, I think Washington is sort of doing the same, regardless of which party wins. That means is that there's a lot of implications on not only national security, but also a whole supply chain and the resiliency of that for companies. And it's not just technology, but everything sort of that you think are just, even food chain supply. I live on a farm. My husband is a farmer and he grows soybeans and corn. And whether China goes into market and actually buy, affect the price. So everything is interconnected. So I think that having really deep understanding of the risk of the business that could be affected either from price and the cost of commodity prices to oil prices, of the second one would be all the geopolitical conflicts, that also affect supply chain and the cost of goods and supply chain resiliency. And I think having legal professionals like Liz and Courtney advising the companies is super important because you can help boards really understand not only the risks that they're facing, but to think about how to evaluate risks that might change in profile and also do really business analysis and frankly, scenario planning, right? As legal professionals, I think having some structure and doing pre-planning really helps boards and CEOs and executives to be able to think about all the possible risks from the big to the small and think about alternatives even to start planning on supply chain resiliency, as well as think about cybersecurity and data protection, which are integral to this whole geopolitical, because there's that with between the US and other powers that are affecting just even schools and hospitals. And a lot of that really requires professional advice on the legal side, not just for compliance, but for risk mitigation while allowing the companies to succeed, right? There's always opportunities in challenges.
I think resiliency might be my key word for 2025. I pick a different one every year, and that just for next year.
Absolutely. You don't know what is going to happen, but if you believe that you have the skill set and the flexibility to be able to make those decisions and being resilient, so that's really the key. Just even from a career standpoint, I love that word, being resilient.
What do you think that law schools and organizations like the ACC, and it sounds like also Direct Women and APAPA, what are they doing from an educational perspective to prepare lawyers for these types of issues? Because we may be focusing on the legal aspects, but as you suggested, that's just one part of the whole equation, and we have to be able to synthesize and recognize the risks and the opportunities. How do we incorporate that into our skill set?
I think that's absolutely right when you say the words synthesize, because that's really key. And Adam Fong is somebody who actually talks about what is our role as, in-house counsel, as outside counsel. We take complex information and analyze it, and we synthesize it in a way so that our clients can actually use it. And so that requires us not only to be really our students, as well as practicing attorneys who get continuing education, to understand the foundation, right, of law that changes constantly. So you have to be continuously in a growth mindset. But most importantly, you have to have the context, which is the business understanding of the macroeconomic, the geopolitical things that are happening, as well as what the risk tolerance is of that particular company. Companies can only succeed if they take risks, and different companies have different culture and different risk tolerances. So our job as lawyers for law students who are going through their journey into the real world, I tell them, you must read the Wall Street Journal every day. You must start reading the Financial Times. You have to have fluency in the language of business. And then for practicing attorneys, I find, and when I speak with my other GC, whether current or retired, they find that the most helpful are the ones who are the trusted advisors who see themselves not only as transactional, I'm giving you a solution for a particular legal issue or problem, but rather as I am part of your overall business strategy, analysis of all the business risks so that we can together partner with what's the best solution for the company. It's not just a legal one, but needs to be holistic.
And that's the most fun way to practice too.
Exactly. Exactly. And boards, you know, and myself having been on board, truly appreciate those lawyers who are practicing that way versus the ones who are just check the box. I'm here just to give you this answer for a particular question and don't really ask more questions to understand a bigger context.
Right.
That's key. The context is key for so many things. And also, you know, we live in the gray a lot, especially with boards, and you've got to be able to pivot and to be agile with questions and answers and details.
Absolutely.
So the last question that we ask all of our guests is, what do you think women in the corporate governance field can add to the current conversation on the societal role of companies?
Well, I think I'm going to revert this to the boardroom, which I always think is sort of who has the power. And to me, I think about having inclusive and gender-based boards. They're able to bring that diverse perspective to the table, right? They better understand the customer preferences. They have, you know, even making sure there's greater due diligence and frankly, asking more questions and for having the representation to help make better decisions. And I really think that boards with women members, and I look at study, I think about the one that was issued in 2020 by the International Labor Organization. They talk about boards with women are more likely to focus on non-financial performance indicators like customer satisfaction, corporate social responsibility, and they're able to, in this way, provide greater accountability and frankly, authority and it becomes just a not only a cultural shift, but frankly gives better information for everybody. And I'm a big believer in that. So I think women in corporate governance should get on boards. And I really totally support women who, and it doesn't have to be public company boards, it could be, you know, private boards, or really be in the boardroom, you know, take a C-suite position or get to be a position where you're trusted advisor to boardrooms, because then you can truly have a voice to be able to influence. And women general counsels and other diverse general counsels, and I also talk about, we have to also understand the power of the purse string, right? So when we're in that position, you know, in-house or somewhere where we can give business to those who support our journey, including, you know, women or others who are supporting diversity, you know, talent and everything being equal, I'm going to support those who are supporting, you know, others in this journey who pay it forward.
That's a fantastic reminder to all of us and inspiring advice as well. So thank you so much, Lily, for that and for this entire conversation. It's been really fun talking with you. So thank you for your time.
Thank you
so much, Liz. Thank you, Courtney.
And for those who are listening, we want to thank you as well. Please subscribe to Women Governance Trailblazers on whatever platform you use for podcasts. We would love if you would rate us while you're there. And in addition, if you know a Women Governance Trailblazer who you think would be a great guest on this show, feel free to ping Courtney or me on either LinkedIn or by email. We're always looking for great women to interview and we've had a great succession of interviews here, so we want to keep that going. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.